Good evening, this is Susan Gingrich, the Herb Lady, and we have with us Thomas Easley from down in Alabama. We just had a wonderful visit down there. I was heading toward Alabama when we did our last show, I believe. Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. So tonight we have planned to talk to you about the ever durable, hopefully, liver. A part of your body you need to befriend. There's no question about it. We have so many chemicals and drugs and alcohol hitting our liver in this time and age in human history. We just really have to make ourselves aware of how to keep it healthy. So that's our topic for tonight. We're going to take a little journey into keeping it well, discerning what it needs, and then later we're going to answer some questions from the emails from last time. So, first of all, the hepatic system, or the liver, is this reddish-colored liver, just like liver you'd buy in a grocery store, a consistency, you know, right in the right-hand side underneath the rib cage. It does over 800 things in the human body. It does actually more functions than the brain does. So it's something well worth taking care of. One of the things that it does that's really important is to clean up the blood. And another thing it does is to convert estrogen and hormones in the body. What else does it do, Thomas?
It breaks down chemicals both that you eat and normal chemical byproducts that your body produces in metabolism. And it breaks down sugars and creates them into a form that's easy to use by the cell.
It also stores certain forms of sugar as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Basically, the liver can do many, many, many things. You mentioned all the processes it can do. It can actually take over a lot of other organ function. It can compensate for pituitary glands and adrenal glands and thyroid and all different types of crazy things if it has to. But it's best to keep your liver in shape. Now, signs of a healthy liver. To me, the most important sign is when you wake up in the morning, you feel refreshed, energized, and ready to go. You sleep really well when you have a healthy liver. So if you wake up frequently at night, and we're not talking about DNA, but if you just wake up normally in between 2:30 and 3 o'clock, which is when the liver naturally dumps bile, you will. That's an indicator of a toxic liver. And Susan, you've got a whole list of different liver conditions we can talk about, too. Can you think any other indications of a healthy liver?
Of a healthy liver, just general good energy, and you've got a good mood going on. You don't have to fight for your mood. As the liver goes down, it's really tough to keep a good mood together and not be angry. See, as the liver goes down, the opposite of a good liver would be that you have uncontrollable rage. In Chinese medicine, they talk about an unhealthy liver the liver being the seat of anger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so road rage is about a liver that's unhealthy. Okay, blood sugar that's going down, alcoholism, all of that would be the liver is compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm sorry, I can't give you much more on a healthy liver. Your skin would be clear. Your eyes would be in good shape because the liver the liver is connected to the eyes as well. And when the liver is functioning properly, you really won't have respiratory problems either, like hay fever and allergies to outside pollen and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so signs of an unhealthy liver.
Okay. Allergies to food or respiratory allergies, skin disorders. Any kind of eruption in the skin is the blood that can't get purified by the liver or the kidneys, and so it has to come out through the skin. Tendency to anger, hormone imbalances.
Anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
Anxiety is a huge one with the liver. And the
groggy
feeling in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever been hungover, that feeling that happens when you don't drink is also the liver. It's a very sluggish, lethargic, lack of motivation type thing that goes on.
Yeah, so this does definitely relate to moods. And we started with that last week with the nervous system and the Or no, the glandular system. We were talking about how moods are related to glands, but also the liver. Just a built-in part of it. Okay, so let's talk about hot and cold. Now,
okay.
We've talked about this before with Chinese medicine. A hot situation is an acute or critical or immediate situation. It's the now of the first sign of a problem. And then a cold situation is when you ignore that long enough, it drives it deep and it becomes a chronic condition that has lost its heat. A hot condition you cleanse or clean out, and a cold condition you build or tone. So you treat these two differently. And the weird thing about livers is that it'll vacillate. It'll go back and forth between being hot and stressed, where you have to cleanse it, and being cold, chronic, depressed, groggy, malaise, you know, disappointed. You know, all of that comes from a chronically depressed, underactive liver.
Those are the extreme signs of normal function in the body. The body goes through natural cleansing and natural building. And the general rule is that if you build the body, it will cleanse itself as it needs to.
Okay. I just flipped back to a class that we did down at Jonas Yoder's. He did an area herb conference, and he really focused on the liver in that particular one. He brought in a speaker who had been a house painter. He would paint rooms, and he told us how they used to start at the top of the room and work down, because by the time they got to the bottom in a closed room, they couldn't stand up anyway, breathing the paint fumes. You know, it's a dreadful business to be in because it's so damaging to the liver. And then he took 2 hours to describe what he went through to repair that and bring himself back to life from such a damaged liver, including vomiting paint crud out of his lungs. I mean, it was just horrendous what he went through. They also had a speaker stand up for just a few minutes and tell us about his experience at Battelle, which is a scientific organization here in Columbus that does a lot of research. And he autopsied cancer patients, and one of the things he looked at was the liver. He found that most cancer patients, by the time they passed away, their liver had turned from that deep red that you find in grocery store liver, you know, beef and chicken and so forth. It had changed to something the consistency of cottage cheese. And he showed us pictures of what would happen to the liver as a person was poisoned by the chemotherapy, the radiation, and the cancer itself. One of the things I got from that talk was that once a cancer gets in the liver, you no longer have the ability to filter, and it's really a difficult cancer to get rid of once it's in the liver. Okay, so those were just some graphic little things I thought I'd throw in there. Okay, so I'm sorry about my phone. I have to apologize up front to anybody listening. We do have a thunderstorm in the area, and when my line gets wet, it tends to do this crackling thing, so I hope we can clean that up for the listeners. And if the thunder gets too close, I will hang up and go to the cell phone, so you can call me on that, Don, if that happens. Okay, now, a hot, stressed, overactive liver. The indications are irritability and headaches, middle back pain, a bloated feeling, and irritation of the eyes. Those are all, you can imagine, they're all like itchy, hot, immediate, grabby kinds of indicators. And we can look at three different classifications of a hot, stressed liver: acute, chronic, and critical. So the acute is defined as nausea and vomiting, loose watery stools, and intestinal grinding. I look at that list of indicators, and it looks to me like food poisoning or of the flu. You know, just basic, you want to throw up, get it over with. That's a liver crisis, okay?
Now, we talk about the liver crisis when we are teaching the Dr. Mom, Dr. Dad class, which teaches you how to get over acute disease. And the symptoms of an acute liver crisis are almost exactly the same as the flu. So what happens is when the liver builds up lots of toxic sludge, toxic bile, it will dump it all at once. And when this happens, this toxic bile irritates the small intestines, which is where the bile is dumped. And if you don't have fiber to pull that down and out and counteract the toxins, you're going to get nauseous. You'll have diarrhea if that stuff goes down, or if it's too much, it will overload the intestines and it will reverse peristaltic action and cause you to vomit. Okay?
Which isn't a bad thing when you really need to vomit. It's great relief when it's over with. But one way you can deal with that, is, and especially if it's food poisoning, is to take in some activated charcoal or some slippery elm, which will both absorb the toxins. And especially if you have some fiber in your intestines, that'll give it something to soak up. And I would recommend no more than 6 activated charcoal. Any more than that, you'll tend to go toward constipation. But I have had experiences where I was actually teaching a class one day, and the salad with the salmon on it apparently wasn't a good idea. I called a break early, went to the restroom, and thank goodness I had my activated charcoal in my purse. It turned into a rather explosive experience that with the activated charcoal, it took care of it just like that, and within 10 minutes I was able to go back and teach and not have any more problems.
I had an experience like that while I was in Utah. Helpful hint for anybody out there, don't eat sushi in the middle of the country. Chances are it's been shipped in and it's not going to be as fresh. So I was at
a convention. Thomas.
Yeah, well, I know that now. You live and you learn. But yes, I was at a conference and wound up eating some bad sushi, and I didn't have any activated charcoal. But I did have lots of enzymes. I had Proactazyme Plus, which is a plant-based enzyme. And I popped about 50 enzymes over the course of an evening and took care of it that way.
By digesting it, just by getting it on, breaking it down.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And slippery elm, if you happen to have it nearby, or anything mucilaginous would also help to kind of slide it on out.
Oatmeal,
sure, that'll work.
Yes, you got the fiber, you've got the mucilaginous parts of the oatmeal, so I like oatmeal for that also.
I like how you think, Thomas. Did I tell you that lately?
I think so, yes.
Okay, that's good. All right, let's move on to the next type of situation. That would be a chronic, hot, or stressed liver. And the indications would be bloating. You have nervous energy in the evening, grogginess in the morning, headaches, like migraines, irritability, flushing of your face, and acne. And you would call that excess liver fire. So you have this excess energy in the liver that needs to be brought off or cleansed, okay? Do you want to say anything more about that class of indicators, Thomas?
No, but we can go ahead and talk about herbs that treat that condition.
Go for it. Or shall I give you this list?
My absolute favorite herb for that is yellow dock. Okay. It's for not an acute, but a subacute or even chronic condition in the liver, and it's an extremely cooling herb for both the liver and the intestines. Now, it works best as a tea, but the capsules will also work. Yellow dock contains anthiquins in the chemical compounds that make up yellow dock, and those will also provide a slight laxative effect, which will help you move bile out of the intestines, and it's very anti-inflammatory. In fact, we consider yellow dock to be a specific remedy for Crohn's disease and irritable bowel syndrome. So any inflammatory condition in the intestines or the liver, I think yellow dock works great.
Okay, and red clover is another great one. We have a great combination that Thomas likes personally.
Yeah, red clover blend is a wonderful, is my favorite liquid herbal combination. And it's a glycerite, so it's not as strong as an alcohol tincture, but it tastes a lot better. And it's a combination of red clover, burdock, potiarco, and I just take a teaspoon and put in a cup full of hot water, and you've got an instant sweet-tasting herbal tea. And I sip on a cup of that 2 or 3 times a day, and it really makes me feel great.
Red clover by itself will also help to purify the blood, which takes the load off the liver.
Yeah, the red clover actually falls into a category of herbs called alteratives, which means that it alters the blood. Okay, that's the mm-hmm. original meaning for that term. And it does that by working on the liver. We consider a blood purifier an alterative, but it does that by slightly cooling. It's not as cooling as yellow dock, but it has a little bit more HEPA protective properties, and it tends to cause a faster filtering effect with the liver. It doesn't stimulate phase one detoxification a lot, but it does help to counteract those superoxide radicals and does some really great things. And I noticed today, yesterday it was, I was driving around in the country on my lunch break in between consults, and red clover is just growing all over the side of the road. I mean, there was enough red clover in one little 50-foot area of ditch, I think, to purify the blood of the entire town that I was staying in.
When I was down there last week, I was noticing that clover, and ours up here is more of a lavender color. It just never gets that red. I never knew there was anything like that.
Yeah, we get the deep red clover down here in the south, and it tastes great.
Mm-hmm.
And just chewing on it tastes great, but making it into a tea especially, you get a nice, warm red color in the tea. And, you know, when you're talking about the classic doctrine of signatures, what the plant looks like in its raw form or cooked form is generally what it treats. So yellow dock tends to treat yellow skin complexions, which would be liver-related. Okay, red clover turns a nice red color in the tea, which means it would help to treat the blood, which is filtered through the liver. So certain signs like this kind of show you what the plant will begin to treat. Milk thistle has a milky white, slightly yellow color to it, and that works especially well on that the cottage cheese type of liver that you were talking about.
Yeah, that needs to be rebuilt.
That needs to be rebuilt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Milk thistle. I like to tell people that, you know, with any liver condition, I would start with milk thistle because it rebuilds.
Yes.
And if you look at how a milk thistle plant exists out in the wild, it will grow wherever it wants to. And it really enjoys taking really crappy soil and rebuilding it. And in about 5-10 years after a thistle patch has been in soil, they'll move on because they've replenished the soil, they've put some nutrients back in, and then other things can grow there, and the milk thistle moves on. If you've ever tried to kill off thistle with ortho or some chemical like that, you'll find that it's very difficult to kill. That's because it can handle any kind of chemical, and that's why it helps the liver so much. If this crackling in the line is getting really awful, Don, just call me on my cell phone, and I'll pick it up there, and we'll go on, okay? But if you're able to filter it out, I'll just ignore it. Okay. Burdock and dandelion are other single herbs that help with excess liver fire, and you had something to say about those before, so go ahead.
Yeah. Dandelion is cool and not quite as much so as yellow dock, but it actually makes a really nice tea when combined with yellow dock and red clover for that instance. All of them together make a great tasting tea. And they're quite often used in combinations together. Dandelion also has some nice kidney properties to it, depending on if you use the fresh dandelion or roasted dandelion. Either of them work well on the liver, but the fresh dandelion especially works well on the kidneys, which helps you flush those water-soluble toxins. And then burdock I consider a very nutritive herb. In fact, it's one of the few nutritive herbs in Chinese medicine that's real common. It's actually got a sweet taste to it, the root of burdock does. And it also grows in soil similar to milk thistle and tends to help rebuild soil quality just like it helps to rebuild liver quality.
If you think about these single herbs, too, they're all highly resistant to chemicals out in the fields.
Sure.
Which is why they help with the liver. Because the liver sorts out chemicals in the body, and it helps to get rid of poison.
Yeah, and so, you know, these herbs combine well together. I mentioned the red clover blend, which has red clover, burdock, and potiarco. Potiarco is a bark off of a tree from the rainforest, and it has blood purifying properties as well as being antibacterial. Now, we wouldn't consider it a liver herb, more of an alterative in the lymphatic sense, but all these combined together make a really, really great and easy to use formula. And they work well in a tea and they taste good also.
Okay, and then combinations. I think it's called Liver Cleanse, Chinese Liver Cleanse now, in Nature Sunshine's herbs. By the way, both of us use Nature Sunshine herbs. I also use Pure Herbs and New Sun, Do you have any other lines you work with, Thomas?
Herbalist Alchemist, Walker Farms, my friend Susan Yerrigan up in Wisconsin makes a great product from Walker Farms. That's her company. And she doesn't have a wide variety of stuff, but it's high-quality tinctures.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually came to an interesting discussion while I was helping Phyllis Light and Matthew Wood make a documentary this past week about the difference between using tinctures and dried herbs or bulk herbs. And, you know, Phyllis was saying in the South, number one, we didn't have access to lots of alcohol, and if we did, we tended to drink it, not put our herbs in it. And so in the South, in the South, we traditionally make teas. And so we just dry the herbs and then use them later on. And, you know, somebody asked, well, what's the shelf life of a dried herb? And Phyllis happened to have a sarsaparilla root there. And she said, well, this root's been here about 4 years. And she broke it open and gave everybody a piece, and you could definitely tell it was sarsaparilla. It still held all of its properties. So if it's dried properly, that works really well. And then Matthew is a big advocate of tinctures, and he uses very small, almost homeopathic dosages of good quality tinctures. So there's benefits to the different types, and what we were discussing is that when you want a long-term, steady building effect, we use capsules, especially for tonic herbs. And then when you want an immediate change, tinctures, and if you want the best of both worlds, you do capsules. And so Phyllis said that what she had people do was, teas, for more resilient medium effect. And Phyllis said what she had her people do was take a capsule of the herb, break it open, and put it in hot water, and drink it as a tea. And then swallow two or three other capsules internally. She got both the long-term effects and the short-term effects, which I think is a really great idea.
That's the way I do kava all the time. Kava.
Yeah.
Break them open, you just pull the capsule apart and make a tea with it.
Yeah, and a lot of these herbs fall into a bitter category, and bitters really work best if you get to taste them because it sets up a whole reaction of stimulating digestive juices and so forth by tasting them. So, you know, don't shy away from the teas just because they taste what you would consider bad, but they taste different probably than what you're used to. And that's because our taste buds have gotten so acclimated to just sugar or just salt, we tend to lose the taste of, or lose admiration of taste for things that are slightly bitter or sour or tart or something like that.
Yeah, I want to mention another combination. It's called Enviro Detox, which was designed for people who work in or are exposed to chemicals on a regular basis. It helps you to detox those environmental toxins that are coming at you all the time. And I'd like to say not only house painters, but hairdressers who breathe in fumes from the hair dyes and the sprays that they're using constantly. Also, people who dye their hair should consider using something to detox that. I know I had a terrible round of that when I had chronic fatigue, which is a liver situation. It's a chronically weak liver. The hair dye threw me off for another 3 or 4 months after I started to get better. So use natural dyes if you're going to do that if your liver's compromised. But hairdressers need to know to constantly be taking milk thistle and or Enviro Detox or something that will help to detoxify them.
And nail techs also.
Oh, yeah.
Around the artificial nails and chemicals used with that.
Well, breathing Enviro in fumes, my goodness.
Great for them. Mm-hmm.
Or people who breathe glue for some reason. You know, there's even some of the household cleaners. If you clean houses and you're using some of those cleaners that melt your bathroom down, you know, takes the rust out, those are nasty chemicals.
Yes.
They really put a strain on the liver. So you can replace that kind of household cleaners. That would be a topic for one night. Ways to replace household cleaners.
Yeah, I've got a great huge poster of I forget who it was. It's another herbalist that gave it to me that came up with it, and it was 101 ways you poison yourself before breakfast.
Yeah, I believe it. Whoa. Even the milk at breakfast.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, you got another category of liver for us.
Okay, before we do that, lemon water and black cherry juice are two foods that also clear the heat from the liver. So you could add those, and I read one book that said to put a tablespoon of cider vinegar and a tablespoon of lemon juice in a cup of warm water every morning, and you'll extend your life by 6 years doing that. Part of it is because you're cleaning your liver out daily. Okay, so now let's go to the inflammatory liver condition, which is, that's right. We did excessive liver fire. So critical conditions of the HOT would be a medical diagnosis of hepatitis or cirrhosis of the liver, and a yellowish cast of the skin, severe flu-like symptoms. You would want to seek medical attention, but understand this as inflammatory liver disease. And I want to say that you can get cirrhosis of the liver by simply not going to the bathroom often enough. And especially if you're eating the same things that you would put into a still to make moonshine or your own bathtub gin, that would be grains of any sort and sugar. You heat that long enough, you're going to have alcohol. So if you're not going to the bathroom often enough, you will create your own alcohol, which is called auto-intoxication. And I worked with a woman one time who only went to the bathroom once every 3 weeks, and she did develop cirrhosis of the liver from that. So understand that it can happen and probably will if you overuse alcohol. Understand that your liver is going to be extremely compromised by any drug, street drug or over-the-counter or prescribed by your doctor. They will all damage your liver, not just the statin drugs. So any of those things can cause this type of situation. Want to say anything more about that? Inflammatory liver?
Yeah. Chemicals, things that you wouldn't think of on a personal story with that is my grandfather, before he passed away, was diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver and an enlarged liver, and he never drank a drop in his life. He was a Baptist preacher all of his life, and when he retired from the Army in 82, he had an obsession with growing the perfect fruit trees, and he used to get out on his tractor with 5 gallons of pesticide or herbicide and go out and, you know, hold the spray thing up above him and spray the trees down. And he'd come in covered from head to toe in pesticides and herbicides. And within 2 or 3 years, he'd went from being healthy to developing cirrhosis of the liver.
Did he also, have nervous ticks and stuff? I've seen that happen with pesticide poisoning.
No, he didn't have nervous ticks. But he actually had what they called a weepy liver. His liver tissue weeped fluid and created a very large swollen stomach. And a large swollen stomach is an indication of liver, especially when it's hard. If it's soft and pudgy, it's probably more like adrenal cortisone production. But if it's a hard, like a filled balloon, that's also an indication of a liver problem.
Wow. Okay, so single herbs for inflammatory liver disease would be milk thistle, first and foremost. And then blessed thistle and dandelion would be good ones. And then combinations. There's a milk thistle combination that Nature Sunshine has that's really good. It has milk thistle plus N-acetylcysteine, am I right?
Yes, and dandelion, I do believe.
And dandelion. Okay, what's N-acetylcysteine? Tell it to them.
N-acetylcysteine is an amino acid combination with acetyl compounds in there, which open up the acetylation pathway in the liver, which is one of the pathways responsible for detoxifying chemicals and heavy metals. It is also the precursor to glutathione. That acetyl pathway is part of what produces your glutathione, which is a full-body antioxidant and chemical protectant.
It will also help, am I correct, on leaky gut, or is that glutamine?
Yes, it will.
Glutathione a precursor to that?
No, glutamine is a precursor to some glutathione production.
And all right. Okay, but they
glutamine
are related.
Helps
I knew
with
they were related.
Gut, but milk thistle combination will help with leaky gut also because, you know, once you get the liver operating properly, it helps reduce inflammation in the gut. So it's a process. It's a roundabout way, but it would definitely work for that.
Another general supplement is vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It helps to reduce all that the free radicals that are going on.
Now,
okay.
I'd like to say about milk thistle and this chronic situation, milk thistle is what we call hepoprotective. HIPAA protective. It protects the liver from chemicals that the body is taking in, as well as producing, because the body produces harsh chemicals in the process of metabolism and catabolism. Okay? So it would protect the liver from that, so the liver has a chance to naturally rebuild and regenerate itself. And the liver will regenerate itself if you give it a break. I mean, liver transplants now aren't transplanting a full liver. They take one quarter of somebody's liver and put it in somebody else, and it'll grow into a full liver because it's a constantly regenerating organ. And that only takes about a month, month and a half for it to grow into a full liver.
I have a friend who developed cirrhosis of the liver. She said it was 2 years after she stopped drinking. And they took her, life-flighted her, because she suddenly bloated up really big. And they life-flighted her to Cincinnati, and they took out half of her liver. And about a week later, it abscessed again, and they took out half of what was left. So she was literally down to a fourth of a liver. And they told her she would never be able to function normally again. We started giving her milk thistle, and she could only afford to take one a day. And I was really worried about her. But she's the kind of person you want to give her everything off your shelf, you know. And she wouldn't take it. She would only take what she could pay for. So she took one a day. And a year later, they x-rayed her and found that she had three-fourths of a liver there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of scar tissue. We took care of that with Hoshu Wu and vitamin E, but she did grow back three times the size of what was left in a year.
Yeah. You know? Now, to show you what a good example of milk thistle is, as far as protecting the liver against poisons, there's a mushroom called the death cap mushroom. And up until a couple of years ago, there had never been a case of somebody surviving death cap poisoning. And Matthew Wood was telling the story. One of his former students had decided, she'd heard about on the news about this death cap poisoning and nobody going outside and picking mushrooms because they could be poisonous. Well, she was just headstrong and thought, well, I'm a fairly good herbalist. I know how to identify plants, and I've been picking mushrooms for years, and I'm not about to let that stop me. And she went out and picked a mushroom that was a little bit immature and not fully developed. Turned out to be a death cap mushroom. And this is, you know, one of the most poisonous things that there are. And she called, she ate it and immediately felt sick and started getting symptoms. And she called the hospital and immediately called Matthew. And Matthew said, I'll be right over there. And he got there about 10 minutes later, and he was going to help drive her to the hospital. And he had read how in Europe they use milk thistle to counteract death cap poisoning, but AMA here hadn't picked up on it. And there's about 20 deaths on average a year from death cap mushroom poisoning. So he reached into his pocket, and he actually had some seed from milk thistle that he'd been out saving to plant for the next year. And he just put a handful of seed in her mouth, and they drove her to the hospital, and, you know, by this time she's, you know, foaming at the mouth and all types of stuff, and she had these little seeds coming out from where she couldn't chew them up and swallow all of them, so we really don't know how many got in her. But within 2 or 3 hours, she was perfectly normal again, and the doctors had diagnosed her with death cap mushroom poisoning and said, there's nothing we can do, you're going to die.
There's a story about that in a book called, what's the name of that book? It talks about cures using herbs, and one chapter is about this, where 16 people went out and ate the wrong mushroom, and they started to come into the hospital, and the first person got a liver transplant, and then the next, they called the rest of the people that had been on this tour eating these mushrooms, and they said, wait a minute, before you do any surgery, they checked with the naturopathic school across the street, decided to take some milk thistle, and by morning, none of the rest of the crowd had any problems.
Yep.
So for immediate food poisoning of any sort, have milk thistle on hand.
Yeah, works great. And Matthew was saying that the doctors couldn't believe that this lady had survived, but because of the rules of the AMA, they couldn't recommend milk thistle to people that came in with death cap poisoning. And so he wound up selling them, or one of his clients wound up selling all the nurses in the hospital a bottle of milk thistle tincture, and the nurses would keep it in their locker, and if somebody would come in from death cap poisoning, they would just give them the tincture of milk thistle, and they would be fine.
Doctors
couldn't do it.
It's a great idea. Okay, now let's go over to the underactive or cold or weakened liver. And this is what I had to deal with chronic fatigue. And I find that with people with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, lupus, any of that sort of disease, you have a very discouraged liver. I'll just put it that way. So general indications are fatigue or malaise, discouragement, chronic depression, hormone imbalance, and body odor. Okay, there's a sluggish liver that we'll talk about and a congested liver or gallbladder problems. The sluggish liver, the indications are groggy feeling, malaise, discouragement, chronic depression, hormone imbalance, and body or foot odor. So not only are you having PMS with your menopause, but your feet stink, and so do your underarms, and you're discouraged about everything, and you're chronically depressed, and you can't get up in the morning to save your soul. It's a wonderful place to live. So that's considered chronic liver weakness. All right? What should we do about that?
I relate chronic liver weakness to phase 2 detoxification deficiencies. Okay? Your liver goes through phase 1 and then phase 2 detoxification. And phase 1 is where the liver takes chemicals, whether they are from the foods that you eat or that your body produces in metabolism and catabolism, and it bombards them with enzymes to turn them into a form that they can then deal with. And there's about 50 enzyme conversions necessary for this. And then it goes into phase 2, which actually grabs this new compound that's made and runs it through one of the 6 major detox pathways, or the 3 minor detox pathways. Now, the byproduct of phase 1 liver detoxification is that the body can actually, or on a regular basis, actually produces something more toxic than what it began with. So it takes a molecule of pesticide, which is toxic, and then it bombards it with enzymes and turns it into a fat-soluble toxin and releases superoxide radicals at the same time. So if you don't go to phase 2 detoxification fast enough, then you not only have the normal liver stuff, but you get the acute inflammatory stuff from the free radicals being produced. So I consider this chronic condition to be a lack of phase 2 detox pathways, and there's some simple things you can do to open those. Now, the largest pathway is the sulfation pathway, okay? And you can open this pathway by eating foods that have sulfur in them. Things that smell bad, or things that smell strong, I should say, onions and garlic are very high in sulfur, okay? So you can open up this pathway and get to feeling better just by eating more onions and garlic. Make up an onion garlic broth and eat it every day. Now, there are some supplements that help out with all the rest of the pathways because they're kind of hard to get foods that work on all of them. The program that I like to use is SAMe, N-acetylcysteine, indole-3-carbinol, and MSM. And that covers all the major pathways.
SAMe is actually a stage of metabolic breakdown. And when we supplement that, it's used in Europe instead of Prozac for depression. It has a wonderful side effect of building the liver back up, and also it tells glucosamine where to put itself in joints. So its side effect is it helps to rebuild your joints at the same time. And you just feel wonderful. It's a great mood to be to have lots of SAMe in your system. And MSM is a great immediate anti-inflammatory as well. And it's odd that those are two that I really enjoy taking all the time. I had fibromyalgia and hurt all the time with chronic fatigue, which is a liver condition. And those are two that have sorted themselves out for me over time that just always bring me relief. And it's interesting that these two phases that you're talking about, that explains a lot about why those work for me.
Yeah, and SAMe and indole-3-carbinol actually work on the pathways that detoxify excess hormones and neurotransmitters from the body.
Uh-huh.
And so basically, people that have anxiety and depression, it's normally from an excess of xenoestrogens and neurotransmitters, so it's like having a mild to severe case of PMS all day long. And you can be a guy and have that, because we have the same hormones we have to break down, and if that pathway is clogged, you're going to be PMSing all day and not even realize it.
Just being irritable. And tell us about helichrysum again. That was good.
Helichrysum for any scarring or cirrhosis of the liver. Helichrysum metallicum is the Latin name, and I think the common name is Life Everlasting. So you know it's got to be a good plan if that's the common name. And you take helichrysum oil and put 5 to 8 drops underneath the right rib cage and cover it with hot water bottle to drive it into the body, and it absorbs through the skin into the liver and will actually repair cirrhosis and liver scarring. Very amazing herb, quite expensive, you know, per container. 5 milliliter bottle will run you $60 to $80, but it's well worth it. It's a wonderful thing for any type of scarring, for that matter. I've used it to dissolve all types of nasty scars over large areas of the body, but it will work internally to dissolve scarring and cirrhosis in the liver.
There's another good one for scarring. That's Hoshu Wu. It's a Chinese herb. A couple other combinations. Nature Sunshine has one called Mood Elevator, right? I can't think of the name. Mood Elevator, and it's a Chinese combination that works on the liver. If the case of depression is gone to the point of being manic depressive, I don't recommend Sammy for that, but this Mood Elevator is wonderful for it, for any type of depression. It just helps
mood
to really bring you up.
Mood Elevator, actually, you can take while you're on other prescription medications for depression. It's one of the few herbs that I still recommend, or herbal combinations that I still recommend while somebody is on antidepressants.
I use Sammy to help them if they want to wean off of something like Paxil, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's very hard to stop those. You end up with worse withdrawal than you had depression to begin with. And Sammy has been used in Europe that way.
Right. So for mild to moderate depression, Sammy works great. When you're talking about severe depression, I like Mood Elevator in high doses, you know, 3 to 4 capsules, 3 to 4 times a day.
But the reason I say not to use it with manic depressive is that it takes you to a nice high, and people tend to think they're fine, and then they quit taking it, and then they drop really far. So I've had some people do that with, because Sammy feels so good. But if you're going to try to get off of a drug, then you can wean yourself off using Sammy. So, okay. And large doses of Mood. Yeah.
I think we should go ahead and throw out a little medical disclaimer here.
That's a good idea.
Neither Susan and I are medical doctors, and we don't advise keying off any medication without your doctor's advice, although it is your body and you can make that decision of your own free will.
But I'll tell you what, if you and your doctor decide to stop one of those drugs, Sammy makes it a lot easier, and they may not know about it, so there you go. Okay, congested liver and gallbladder. Is the other thing. Now, the gallbladder is not a useless organ or an organ that was designed to be removed for some surgeon's benefit. So what it is a little regulatory device that tells your it decides when to squirt the bile out into the system. And bile is supposed to come in when there's fatty material in the stomach to be digested. It also sets up the peristaltic motion in the lower intestine. So it's not a useless organ by any means. I think of it as the liver is this big bathtub with all kinds of stuff going on in there, and when you need to drain the bathtub, you'd send it down through the drain. Now, if we decide to blame the drain if it gets clogged up, we're going to remove it or chop it off, but you know what kind of a mess that would make under your house. Same kind of thing with the gallbladder. It is a regulating device, and it is really important. I've seen people go into blood pressure problems after their gallbladder is removed, cholesterol. They can't deal with fats at all. They get this random bile flow out into the stomach that just becomes very uncomfortable. So for good digestion throughout life, keep your gallbladder and flush it out every once in a while. And there are several world-known ways to do that. One of them, according to Frank Nisi, is to take 22 lecithin 3 times a day for 3 or 4 days until you poop the gravel gray stuff out that... and then your pain will be relieved. I have also used a recipe that involves gallbladder formula from Nature Sunshine to the tune of about 9 a day, hydrangea, 9 to 12 a day. That softens calcifications in any part of your body, kidney stones or gallbladder. And then, what's the other thing we use? Cascara to set up a flush through the gallbladder. You use lots of apple juice through the 3 days, and you end with a half a cup of olive oil mixed with a half a cup of lemon juice. Chase that with a tablespoon of cider vinegar mixed into a cup of warm water, and lie on your side, on your right side, and in the morning when you go to the bathroom, you'll see some gray gravel come out. Those are not really stones. It's really soapy stuff. And Thomas, tell us what you know about that and blood sugar. What happens?
Well, the basis of the sludge in your gallbladder is actually sugar-related. It's from the inflammation in the liver that sugar causes. And so if you have an acute gallbladder attack or you have your gallbladder out, you can consider yourself a prime candidate for diabetes. We consider you a pre-diabetic. And that's because the sugar has set up an inflammation in your body, and that inflammation that caused the gallbladder problem will also cause type 2 adult onset diabetes later on in life if you don't start dealing with it. Now, there are a couple of single remedies, what we call simple remedies, for the gallbladder. And you use these in fresh tincture form. And for the gallbladder, there is fringe tree bark, which is also a good liver herb, and it's extremely safe over long term to use. And then there's celandine, which is not good to use over a long term basis, and in high doses can be toxic, but in small therapeutic doses, like 5-10 drops twice a day, will cause a flushing of the liver and gallbladder better than just about anything. The gallbladder can also cause some interesting things to happen. It can cause sharp shooting pain in the middle of the chest or around the right rib cage and up the right shoulder. In Chinese medicine, there's a spot at the top of the right shoulder called GB20, gallbladder 20. And I've never, ever done a massage on somebody that spot wasn't sensitive, which makes me think that most people have gallbladder problems to some degree or another. Okay? So, those two herbs can help facilitate the process. I still use the gallbladder flush that Susan was talking about. I think it's great to do once a year just for maintenance. And the apple cider vinegar that she mentioned is a new one for me, but I'm going to try that, and that really should help cut down on the nausea from everything that I understand about
it. Well, when you take a half a cup of olive oil with lemon juice, it's a really horrible thing to face off with, and that kind of cuts the greasy taste in your mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, just makes it a little more palatable.
Now, in my experience, I advise everybody when they do this to take half a cup of olive oil and a half a cup of lemon juice into the bedroom with them and drink it and immediately lay down.
Right.
If I stay up and try to move around and function after doing that, I get nauseous.
I do too. It's awful. But it's really worth doing. And
yes. We
have had people come out a week before their surgery scheduled, do the flush, and then they are able to cancel their surgery and then don't have any more problems. So it doesn't hurt you to not have your gallbladder removed. Okay? All right. I want to give a phone number if anybody has questions or want to make a comment. It's 877-876-5527. And while we're waiting to see if anyone calls in, my email address is ngingrich, GINGERICH, at cinci, CINCI, .rr.com. And Thomas, give yours.
My email address is tmeasley, TMEASLEY, at hotmail.com.
Okay, and Thomas and I are teaching a class on the 5th of May in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's actually Bluffton, Indiana. There's a little health food store that's sponsoring us. And we want to give you a short thing on what you would get out of that class if any of you live near enough to get to it. It's called Dr. Mom, Dr. Dad, and it's the best spent money that you could possibly put into your family and yourself in one day. And we will be teaching a full 7 hours of instruction live there. And then you can also opt to take four more classes on teleconference calls with us live as well. And you can also get some of the formulas from the class if you want to. It costs $135 per person to come, which is really inexpensive when you consider how much you will save in emergency room costs. I know the last time we paid for an emergency room, it took us several months to pay it off. It was $1,000 just for one stomach ache. So if you've ever experienced that kind of cost, this is well worth it, because I can guarantee you that the next time you sprain your ankle and you don't have to be life-flighted out of the trail because you know what to do about it, or you take care of your burn, or you no longer have to call 911 for the bee stings, you know, if you're highly allergic, we'll show you exactly what plants to use take care of the sorts of emergencies.
Yes, so if you ever have earaches, sore throats, bumps, cuts, bruises, fevers.
Yeah.
We show you how to get rid of all of that in 20 minutes or less, with the exception of a fever, and that only takes a couple of hours. But any acute pain, we show you how to get rid of in 20 minutes or less.
Please call this number if you would like to join us for that class. It's 260-824-1600. There is a 135-page manual that goes along with it. I promise you, you will love it. We will have a great time. And it's the basics course in a certification program that includes 7 courses total through Tree of Light. So we'd love to see you there. Call. You can email either of us if you'd like to register too. A spouse will give you a special rate on that if you use the same book, and kids in the same family as well. Okay? Did I hear a question come in? I heard a sound. I didn't know whether...
Yes, I have a question.
Okay, who's that?
My name is Heather.
Okay, what's your question?
I have a situation that they call lipomas, which is...
I'm having trouble hearing you. Can you speak up a little?
Yeah, I'll speak louder. Is that better?
That's better.
Yeah, I have lipomas, which are little fatty non-cancerous tumors. I have problems digesting fats, and I wondered if this is related to gallbladder.
I would say.
Yes.
Go ahead, Thomas.
Yeah, I would definitely say it's related to gallbladder. If you still have your gallbladder and you're having problems digesting fats, I would recommend doing about a month of lipase enzyme.
Lipase, okay.
L-I-P-A-S-E, lipase,
yes,
is the enzyme that helps you digest fats, along with a broad spectrum of food enzymes. Now, after that month, your body should be able to handle a gallbladder flush like we talked about. And I would want to do the lipase and food enzymes for about a month first before I attempted that gallbladder flush. But yes, that's definitely the liver, the gallbladder not producing enough bile or releasing enough bile to deal with those. And there is a product specifically for fatty deposits and fatty tumors throughout the body,
yes,
and we call that product All Cell Detox. And I would combine that with chickweed. Chickweed emulsifies fat. So All Cell Detox and chickweed to deal with what you've got going on now and to prevent it in the future, food enzymes and lipase,
okay,
followed by a gallbladder flush after 1 month.
And if you want to go to Nature Sunshine product, please email one of us and we'll get you signed up so that you're in our group too.
Okay.
Also, another one that breaks up fatty fats anywhere is simple lemon oil. And you can rub a lemon oil right onto the area, or you can be taking lemon juice in. That really helps to break up fats. That's why we put lemon in the dishwashing soap. It breaks up fats.
Oh, interesting. Huh. Okay.
So, I like it simple.
Yeah. Well, I do a lot of lemon juice. I like it a lot. But
good.
Right.
Yeah.
But don't
great.
Put sugar with it. That might be a mistake.
Do what?
No sugar.
No sugar? Oh, no. I don't.
Just
I do
lemon.
No
okay.
Sugar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm going to email you.
All right. Great.
Thanks a lot.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
Thomas, you had a question that came in on the email last time.
Yeah, we had a question that was emailed in last time. And feel free, guys, if you're listening, to email us in questions for next time, and we'll be happy to answer those in a couple of weeks when we get back on air. And the question was about prostatitis and basically inflammation of the prostate, and especially when there is candida involved. Now, I could spend a long time talking about this, but we'll do a basic thing. Okay. The prostate is nestled in between the intestines and the kidneys and bladder. So if you have swelling in the prostate, it's probably because stuff's leaking out of your intestines and kidneys. That's leaky gut syndrome and leaky kidney syndrome. The whole body can become leaky after chronic inflammation. So reducing that inflammation with a great broad-spectrum antioxidant like Tygo is a wonderful thing to do, and reducing it specifically in the intestines is great, and I like to use Yellow Doc for that. For the prostate itself, I use herbal pumpkin, which is a formula with pumpkin seeds and lycium and zinc in there that helps to build the prostate and help reduce swelling. And I also like salt palmetto berries, which help to reduce swelling in the prostate. Another thing that you have to consider when you've got any type of prostate issue is you've got to have regular ejaculation to cleanse the prostate. The body has four major detoxification areas, okay? We've got the liver intestines, we've got the kidney bladder, we've got the skin, we've got the lungs. Now in females, we have the menses, and in males, we have ejaculation. And so these are all ways to cleanse the body, and if you have inflammation or swelling, it's because you're not getting bad stuff out fast enough.
So okay? You won't go blind, is that what you're telling me?
You won't go blind, no.
That's a good note to leave it on tonight, Thomas. Great show. So, I think we're a little bit over time, so we better say good night, everybody.
Okay, good night. Thank
good
you all
night,
for
y'all. And if you need a Dr. Mom, Dr. Dad class or an ABC plus D class, which is another one in this series, please give us an email and let us know you're interested, and we could put together some people in your area that would also be interested, and we'll start traveling toward you. All right, thank you all. Good night.
Good night.